You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Well, it looks like Mad Max is back. Max Scherzer pitched a gem on Friday night, leading the Mets to victory in the first segment. I'll discuss his resurgence in the second segment. I want to go over the offense a little bit in the game, a managerial decision I did not like from Buck Showalter, and how things almost got away from the Mets in that last inning. Then in the final segment, we are going to discuss Daniel Vogelbach taking Mark Vientos' playing time and how the Mets did not build a roster that could complement their young core because maybe they didn't realize what they had with this young core. Before we get into any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing at JustBaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor. Now, if I told you before the season that through eight starts, Max Scherzer would have a 3.54 ERA, you probably wouldn't have batted an eye. Yeah, you would have thought, okay, it's not the 2.33 ERA from last year, but 3.54 isn't terrible. It's a pretty solid ERA for a starting pitcher, and you would wonder how he got there, but there wouldn't have been really any foretelling of the roller coaster that this season has been. Eight starts for Max Scherzer has been a journey. There was a suspension none of us saw coming with the sticky stuff or not so sticky stuff, depending on what you want to believe. There was the rough start at the rough start, the coming back, giving up all those runs against the Tigers, the constant, starts getting pushed back, the neck, the back, all of these different things. And yet, to be sitting here, heading into June with a 3.54 ERA, it makes you take a step back and think, were we panicking a little bit too much? It's crazy what a couple of weeks will do for you. But that's the tale of a marathon of a season. That's kind of the roller coaster this team went on. I mean, Max Scherzer in some ways kind of embodies everything that happened with the Mets this year. That there was a point we were thinking, oh my gosh, is this another one of those 2021 Mets seasons where everything fell apart, or just any Mets season in any of our lifetimes where this is just a team that can't figure it out, to what the last 2 weeks have brought, which has been a team that looks like a quality baseball club, okay, that's going out, that's winning series, maybe not at the rate of a 101-win ball club last year, but certainly of a playoff team. That's what they've looked like the last couple of weeks. And what is the staple of any team that can survive a season? It's good starting pitching. And all of a sudden, you're seeing more times than not the Mets are getting that. When you have Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander atop this rotation pitching, well, it changes everything. When you have guys at the back end like Carlos Carrasco giving the outing he had the other night, that's a huge improvement. When Kodai Senga is giving you some quality outings, when Tyler McGill is throwing them in, now there's a five-man group that you at least have some faith in. That, all right, they can, week over week, put the Mets in a good position to win. And with that burden lessened from this lineup, all of a sudden, you're seeing some more results there. Max Scherzer spotted two runs today before he steps on the mound, which is a testament to, how this offense is starting to click. And Brandon Nimmo had a huge game. He leads it off with a walk. Francisco Lindor hits a two-run homer. There you go. All right, Max, take us there. Now, the team was able to get him some more runs later, but really that's all that Scherzer needed. Seven innings for Max Scherzer in this one. Eight strikeouts, and the big one, no walks. That is the testament to when Scherzer is at his best, when he's not walking people. And, you look at the month of April, two walks against the Brewers, five runs allowed. Start against the Padres, he only gave up one hit, but walked three. Didn't give up a run in that start. The Dodgers start had two walks in three innings, and then that was the sticky substance one. Comes back against the Tigers, gave up eight hits in that one. One walk, only three strikeouts. And then what we've seen since the last three starts. Two hits allowed against the Nationals. Five innings pitched. Two walks, six strikeouts, one earned run. Six innings shutout baseball against the Guardians. Three hits, one walk, five strikeouts. And now what is probably, definitely his best start of the season. Goes seven. First time this year Scherzer has gone seven. He scattered six hits, but they didn't really catch up to him. Gave up a run on a homer. Eight strikeouts, no walks. Great performance. Got over 100 pitches for the first time this year, which is crazy. And look, I can understand, if you want to be skeptical of Scherzer's resurgence, you would say Nationals, Guardians, Rockies. I don't see a good baseball team in there. But look, you could say the same thing about the Tigers, and they put up six runs on Scherzer. Okay, what I've seen in these three starts is a pitcher that is in more command, a pitcher that is attacking and you know, pitching mad like Mad Max does, and someone who has, you know, rediscovered his out pitch, and he's getting to it more often. And tonight, eight strikeouts, perfect example of that. And I would also counter the Nationals, Guardians, Rockies argument and say, look, Max Scherzer has never pitched well in that ballpark, and can you blame him? It's Coors. ERA over six going into this outing. Had never won at Coors Field. And that's a team that has hit home runs this year and has scored runs in that ballpark, as they always do. If this was facing the Rockies at home, and he put up seven shutout, or in this case, seven innings, one earned run, I would maybe say, all right, you know, he's been pitching at home, although the one against the Nationals on the road, although for Scherzer might as well be a home game pitching in that ballpark. I could get behind that argument or that skepticism. I could kind of understand, all right, let's see him do it against a good team. But for my money, to see Scherzer go out in Coors Field and get through seven, which is really hard to do, I think he looks pretty well back. And it is crazy to see that ERA of 3.54. That kind of blew my mind when I was looking at the box score tonight after the game. I was like, wait a minute, he cut it to 3.54 now? Because I was wondering, you know, what's your ERA going to be on the season? Is it going to be over four? What's it going to look like? No, not at all. He's got now under four. And look, if he puts together a couple more good starts, all of a sudden that thing might creep right back below three again. And then, wow, here he is, one of the best pitchers in baseball. That's why we probably shouldn't have doubted him. And why, even when I did doubt him, I still was continuing to say, I feel like he's going to be better than this at least. It certainly has been. And one thing that also kind of blew my mind a little bit, looking over the numbers, April, he made three starts. And again, the third one was the one where he got pulled from the game with the sticky stuff or whatever happened there. Still, interesting to note, gave up five runs in that first start, had two good ones after that. His ERA in April, 3.38. His ERA in May after four starts, including that one bad start to start the month, 3.38. And really, you look at his season, he's had two bad starts. Like, really, he's had two bad starts. That's pretty much it. I was at the opening day start in Miami. Yes, the runs caught up to him. He didn't look bad in that one. So maybe Max Scherzer is going to be okay. And if he's looking like this, I think the rest of the team, rest of the rotation, can really follow suit. So love what I saw from him, and also love what I saw from this lineup. Didn't entirely love one decision in particular by Buck Showalter, and also, of course, just the general lineup and the fact that Mark Vientos hasn't played, although apparently playing time is going to come. I want to discuss all of that in just a minute. Before we do, if you are looking for a delicious snack but don't want all the sugar and calories, then you need to try the best tasting protein bar ever, which, of course, is Built Bar. You got to try Built Bars. What makes them so good? They're covered in 100% real chocolate, and they come in unbelievable flavors like the churro, the peanut butter brownie, cookies and cream. Built Bars taste like candy bars, only come, though, with 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and they have a whopping 17 grams of protein. And the best part, you no longer have to wait around to get a box. Well, you still can go to Built.com, order online, get it shipped directly to your door. If you're listening right now and you just want to try Built Bar for yourself, you can head to your local Walmart or Sam's Club, where you can find some of their incredible specialty flavors. Walmart, go to the pharmacy section. You're going to find the 4-bar box of their cookies and cream, double chocolate, and the coconut puff. If you're close to a Sam's Club, run in and grab a 13-bar box with their hit flavors, the brownie batter puff or the churro puff. You can thank me later. Go to your local store and buy Built Bars today. Mets play the Colorado Rockies at 9:10 Eastern Time tonight. If you want to catch every pitch of the Mets' hometown broadcast, you can with SiriusXM using the SXM app. Just search Mets. So I discussed the lineup a little bit with Francisco Lindor's 2-run homer, but the Mets were able to score 5 in this game, and it did get dicey, so I want to get into some of that late inning stuff. You had that first inning. The Mets were able to tack on 2 more in the 5th. Once again, who was in the middle of it? None other than Brandon Nimmo. He likes playing near his hometown team. That's what the Rockies were to him growing up in Wyoming. I remember at one point this offseason, some of us thought he would sign with the Rockies. And luckily, the Mets were able to bring him back to his new home. And we saw him have a 2-triple game, which is a rarity. He scores 1 run in that 5th inning. Of course, scored the other run in the 1st. And then a 3rd run in the 9th. But in the 5th inning, he had a triple. And then Francisco Lindor got a base knock to score him. Jeff McNeil got on base via an error. And then you had Brett Beatty score Lindor with a 2-out hit to put the Mets up 4-1. 9th inning rolled around for this offense. And again, it was Nimmo with a triple. And Francisco Lindor nearly left the yard twice. It was kind of shocking that the wind knocked that ball back in. And Jerks and Profar made kind of a basket catch on the warning track. But of course, Nimmo tagging up as he should on any fly ball was easily able to score. That's how the Mets got to their 5 runs. You look at the lineup in the game, 2-for-2 for Nimmo with 3 walks, 3 runs scored. You have Lindor, 2-for-4, 2 runs scored, 4 runs batted in. McNeil and Alonso, 0-for-9 together. Not a great day for them. Beatty, 2-for-4, solid outing for him with an RBI. Mark Vientos came in. I'll discuss that in a second here. Wardo Escobar came in for defense. Again, I'll discuss that. Starling Marte, Daniel Vogelbach, Tommy Pham. Combined, your 6-7-8 hitters, 0-for-12. Here's the problem with that. As much as I have said that I was okay with Francisco Alvarez batting 9th, and Buck Showalter sort of echoed my comments on it, which is why he's keeping him down there. He likes Nimmo hitting behind him. And I do appreciate that he's getting good pitches to hit. What I don't like is that he has 3 guys in front of him that aren't getting on base. So when he gets a knock, and he was 1-for-3 in this game and also got hit by a pitch, no one's there for him to drive in. So if that continues to be the case, maybe you bump him up to 6 and you move everyone else down the line. At this point, bat Starling Marte 9th. See if he gets some good pitches to hit and get a double leadoff going. I know that he likes to hit in one spot, and that is all fine and well, but if he can't get any consistency going this season, maybe you got to do that to him. And you know what? Maybe he finds consistency in that 9-hole, and you have a double leadoff that works for you. I know Marte, you know, getting paid the money that he is and everything else, and, you know, former All-Star and all that, he probably doesn't see himself as a 9-hitter, but he's honestly been one this year. So that is something the Mets maybe should consider. But what I don't like is how Buck Showalter finally got Mark Vientos in this game. And we'll see if he's true to his word. Before the game, he said Vientos would be there the next 3 days. So maybe this was a time to audition Vogelbach, and I think you saw all you needed to, and he's going to get him out there. But he finally gets him in the game because, hey, good matchup, trying to tack on a run late. So a lefty comes into the game. Let's get Mark Vientos out there. Let's put him in the game, and let's have him hit against Brad Hand. But how do you work him into the lineup? Who do you pinch hit for? None other than Brett Beatty. Brett Beatty had 2 hits in this game. Brett Beatty can hit left-handed pitching. And Brett Beatty continues to show game over game that he is leaps and bounds the best defensive third baseman on this roster. He's been great over there. Seriously. I mean, I don't know if he'd ever win a gold glove in a league that has Nolan Arenado and Manny Machado and some of the defenders that play that position. But man, does he look good at third base. So late in the game, don't really love taking him out when you are already staked to a 3-run lead, particularly because there's every possibility that he was the best guy to be up in that spot regardless with the runner on base. Especially because, for what it's worth, let's just say Beatty gets a hit and you want to find an at-bat for Mark Vientos against a lefty. The Mets would have been just as well served hitting Mark Vientos for Starling Marte, which I know he would never do, but still. And going ahead and, you know, putting Escobar at second base and shifting Jeff McNeil into the outfield and keeping Brett Beatty at third, or just waiting to see if Daniel Vogelbach comes up and saving him for that spot. I know he's going to say, man, you want me to play Mark Vientos? I played him and now you're mad at me. Here's why. There was a play that could have cost the Mets the game. Ninth inning rolls around. David Robertson came out on the eighth and he gave up a home run, but still the Mets had, you know, at that point, 4-2 lead after the homer. They tack one on, they get it back, so it's 5-2 heading into the ninth. Brooks Raley comes on, walks the leadoff man, gets a line out, and then walks the third hitter. Two walks in the ninth inning when you're trying to close the game. When you have a 3-run lead, it's exactly what you can't do to bring the tying run up to the plate. Adam Ottavino comes in. There's a base hit. At least that's what they ruled it as. Where Eduardo Escobar just could not feel the backhand, Brett Beatty makes that play. Luckily, Francisco Lindor backed up the misplayed grounder, backpicked to second base, and the Mets got a lucky call even because it kind of let the guy dive back safe. Otherwise, if they don't get that out, it's bases loaded, one out. Luckily, they do. Mike Moustakas comes up. Adam Ottavino strikes him out. It doesn't matter. But Eduardo Escobar is not the defender that Brett Beatty is. Obviously, I get not having Mark Vientos out there at third base in the ninth inning. But when you're already staked to a 3-run lead, at that point, don't force the matchup and take out your best defensive third baseman, in my opinion. But hey, all this could be solved if you just had the best hitter DHing every day. And maybe we're going to see it the next 3 days. Mark Vientos about to get some run. Daniel Vogelbach maybe going to the pine. I want to discuss that in just a minute. Before we do, though, another word from our sponsors. The Mets play the Colorado Rockies at 9:10 Eastern Time tonight. If you want to catch every pitch in the Mets' hometown broadcast, you can with SiriusXM using the SXM app. Just search Mets. Now, Daniel Vogelbach's numbers in May are pretty bad. 182 average, 308 on base, 273 slug. Looking a little bit deeper. May 17th, Mark Vientos comes up. Okay. In the start sense, May 18th, 0 for 3, 2 strikeouts. Pinch hitting appearance, 0 for 1, struck out. Another start, got a couple of walks, 1 for 2, not a bad game. Then 0 for 2, did nothing, 0 for 3 with a strikeout, 1 for 3, 2 strikeouts, and then today, 0 for 4 with a strikeout. All of the, you know, Daniel Vogelbach draws his walk. Well, he does have, since Vientos came up, 5 walks drawn. He also has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 strikeouts. Okay? He's not hitting well at all. And he looks lost at the plate. And it looks like a guy who's looking over his shoulder. Very similar to the bad at-bats you saw from Eduardo Escobar to begin this season. The Mets are not putting their veterans in a good position. And they're not putting their young players in a good position. And it's something that we saw last year, and it's something we've continued to see this year. And I don't know if it's a Buck Showalter problem or a Billy Upper problem, but it is a problem for this Mets team. Daniel Vogelbach does not look confident at all right now. At all. And I don't know where exactly that is stemming from. Is it just because of how he feels at the plate, or is it because he knows that his replacement sitting on that bench? Would he be better to completely be riding the pine to not be getting any at-bats and to only be put in specific matchups. Here's the issue with that train of thought, though. What matchups are you putting him into the lineup in? Where do you see his bat coming up if he is off the bench? If Mark Vientos is getting everyday run as the DH? That's the issue. Because outside of having Vogelback hit for Vientos late, which I don't love because I like Vientos against righties and lefties, having him hit for, say, a Mark Canna or a Starling Marte, or I guess a Tommy Pham if he's starting a game. And then you get into the situation where you just sub someone in that can't play defense, and you got to find somebody else. So now you always have to kind of marry that substitution with another substitution. And let's just say it's the eighth inning, and Mark Canna is coming up, and he's leading off an inning against a really tough right-handed reliever. You say, let's get Vogel back into the game. All right. Well, he draws a walk. Well, now you got to get someone in. Luckily, in that instance, if you haven't used Tommy Pham, you can sub him into the game. But it's just, it's a tough roster fit with Mark Vientos. And if you believed in him enough, then you shouldn't have called Vientos up in the first place. And you should have just continued to give him the confidence to roll him out there and see what happens. But when you made that move, that is where, you know, I was hoping for a phantom Vogelback IL stint where you could keep him on your team, but give Vientos 2 weeks of run. Because this combination is not working for this Mets team. And I'm happy to hear that Vientos is going to start a couple of games. But, you know, who knows if he gets subbed out again in a big spot. And that's what continues to bother me with the way the Mets are kind of rolling out this team. And they went into the year expecting Daniel Vogelback to give them power and hit righties as well as get on base like he does. And they were expecting Tommy Pham to be that other counterpart to him in the DH spot, or, you know, letting that DH be moved around, but, you know, having him start against lefties, and that hasn't worked. And they thought that Canna would be their starting left fielder and that would work, and it hasn't. And they thought Eduardo Escobar might be their starting third baseman, and that hasn't worked. And luckily, Escobar has taken to a bench role. And to me, that's something that you now know moving forward. All right, that works. But Omar Narvaez is on rehab now. And he could come back first week of June. June 5th or June 6th, I think. So do the Mets go to three catchers when Narvaez comes back because they want to work in Alvarez as a DH a little bit? If they do that, what do they do? Do they option, Vientos to AAA? I mean, I could see that being kind of the we're going to keep our depth scenario here, where Alvarez essentially replicates what you might get from Vientos in that, you know, right-handed bat against a lefty pitch roll. But then at the same time, that means you're starting Tomas Nito. I would rather see Narvaez get starts when Alvarez isn't behind the dish. So it gets back to the fact that the veterans that were brought in were not brought in to complement the rookie core they had coming up. And it's as if the Mets weren't confident enough that rookie core was going to be able to help this team. And it's almost like they didn't know what they had. And now that they've realized what they have, which is four guys, three that are up and one that's a triple, that could be legitimate impact players, and two of them are already showing it with Beatty and Alvarez grabbing starting jobs on this team. They have yet to figure out how to complement that core. And all I can hope is that this is a scenario where the Mets are feeling things out and then they will kind of round their roster correctly into form midway through this season, whether that's some trades or whatever they have to do, and find a nucleus that works with the kids getting opportunity. And that might mean that Ronnie Mauricio is your starting second baseman and Jeff McNeil is your starting left fielder and Mark Vientos is your DH. And then you're just trying to find what, you know, four bench pieces work with that team. And my guess is it would be Escobar, Narvaez, and then you got to find the other two. Canna, probably the fourth outfielder. And then it's just find one more piece. And I don't think that Daniel Vogelback or Tommy Pham are that fourth piece when everything is said and done. So we'll see how this continues to evolve. But the good news is it seems like you're going to be able to watch a lot of Mark Vientos for the rest of the weekend, at least if Buck Showalter is true to his word. So we'll see. That's going to be all, though, for me this week. I'll be back on Monday for all you everydayers, recapping the rest of this series against the Rockies and hopefully some big games by Mark Vientos. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. Follow the show, Locked On Mets.